We're now beginning the 9th chapter of 1 Samuel. The stage is all set for Israel to have its first king. Samuel has been told by God that he will yield to the people's demands and set a king in office. The people are now told by Samuel to go home and wait, every man to his own city, for this is a matter that God's going to attend to. And one of the strange things, or maybe it's something to be said to the benefit of the men of Israel, is that they now know that a king is imminent, but nobody seems to be presenting himself to Samuel and saying, "Let me be king." Nobody seems to be a candidate. Nobody seems to be running for this office. And so, although the people had digressed in demanding a king, they weren't playing the full politics and in trying to vaunt one above another to seek the office of king, and so we have to give them credit for that. It seems that the nation is rather silent as God goes through the process of selecting a king here. And the first part of this 9th chapter of 1 Samuel gives some background about Saul and his family. Verse 1, "Now there was a man of Benjamin whose name was Kish, the son of Abiel, the son of Zeror, the son of Becherath, the son of Aphiah, a Benjamite, a mighty man of power." So the first thing we learn is that Saul comes from the tribe of Benjamin. His family are Benjamites. And this tribe of Benjamin is said to be the smallest tribe. It also is one of the most favored of the tribes. As we know, Saul and Paul of the New Testament also came from this tribe of Benjamin. And Paul mentions his being a member of this tribe as though it were quite an honor in Romans 11:1 and also in Philippians 3 and 5. And we remember this tribe had had a very peculiar history. Back in the book of Judges, we learned that this tribe had been reduced to a very small number by the fatal war with Gibeah. They had been reduced to 600 men. And then there was a very peculiar act carried out to get wives for these 600 men so that the tribe could continue to survive. Well, all the wealth of this whole tribe then was divided among these 600 families. And so it seems that to make up for the smallest of the tribe, each family was a family of a lot of power because of the great amount of wealth that they had accumulated when the total possessions of the tribe were divided among the 600 men after this war that Gibeah had with the rest of the nation. So Saul comes from a family then that is represented by a man who's described as being a Benjamite, a mighty man of power. And it's easy for us to understand then how the average family of Benjamin might be a more wealthy and powerful family than the average family of another tribe who would receive a much smaller inheritance from the division given to their tribe. Verse 2, "And he had a son whose name was Saul." So this is the first mention of Saul. He is the son of Kish, this mighty man of Benjamin, a choice young man and a goodly. So nothing but good is said about Saul, a choice young man. That is, everything about him seems to be very favorable. He's one that would be chosen for many types of activities. If one just had the opportunity to choose someone, this man would be chosen. He's a choice young man. He's a good specimen of what a young man should be. He's a good representative of his family and of his tribe, and a goodly. It seems that he was in accordance with all the laws of his family and the laws of the nation and the laws of God, a goodly young man. And he's further described, "And there was not among the children of Israel a goodlier person than he." So of all the people that could be found in the whole nation, no one could be found that was any better than Saul. And this truly was a very great honor for the tribe of Benjamin. It being the smallest of the tribes, a tribe that had almost been obliterated by that civil war, now was the tribe to put forth the first king of Israel. No one from Judah seemed to even aspire to this office. But here's a man who had no idea that he was going to be king. that is now going to be thrust into the most prominent position in the land. So he's further described, from his shoulders and upwards, he was higher than any of the people. Now, nothing is said about the mental ability or accomplishments of this man Saul. Nothing is said about his education. Nothing is said about his ability to rule. But the most outstanding thing that's mentioned is that he was physically larger, higher than the other people. From his shoulders and upwards, he was higher than any of the people. So in a crowd, he would stand head and shoulders above the other people because of his sheer physical stature. And this seems to be the kind of a man that the people wanted to rule, a man that would be very commanding in his appearance, not necessarily strong and powerful. He didn't seem to be any stronger than any other man, but a person that would take the eye whenever he appeared in public, and he would be the outstanding one in a group of people. So since Israel desired to have a king like the other nations, they would have a king that would be very pleasant to look upon, a king that would be outstanding in his physical appearance. So beginning in the third verse, we have the story of how Saul actually made contact with Samuel. And the asses of Kish, Saul's father, were lost. And Kish said to Saul his son, "Take now one of the servants with thee, and arise, and go seek the asses." So in the course of events, some of the animals of Kish were lost. Of course, we know that when we possess goods, we have to be prepared to lose those goods. But when we lose them, it's also proper to go seek after them. It's also very proper for a son, for a child, to be most interested in the well-being of the parents and the seeking out after the things that belong to the parents. So Saul is employed to go seek the asses. Of course, the servant alone could have been sent, but the servant probably wouldn't have had the same care for the things of the father that the son, Saul, actually would have had. So Saul goes with a servant. And he passed through Mount Ephraim and passed through the land of Shalisha, but they found them not. Then they passed through the land of Shalem, and there they were not. And he passed through the land of the Benjamites, but they found them not. So we see they passed over several places, traveled apparently some good distance looking for the animals that were lost, but they could not find them. And when they were come to the land of Zoph, Saul said to his servant that was with him, "Come, let us return, lest my father leave caring for the asses and take thought for us." So they'd been gone so long that Saul was concerned about what his father was going to think, that maybe the father would think something had happened to them. And then he would stop caring for the asses and be more concerned about what happened to his son and his servant. So it's also very appropriate and well for our children to consider the thoughts of the parents, to consider the concerns and the worries that the parents might have about them, and to do whatever they can to alleviate those worries on the part of the parents. So Saul thought that it was appropriate to go back at this time just to calm down the worries that his father might have had about him and the servant. Verse 6, "And he said unto him, Behold, now there is in this city a man of God, and he is an honorable man." So here they are in the city, or near the city of Ramah, which is the home city of Samuel. And the servant says to Saul, "There is in this city a man of God." Certainly Samuel was a man of God. He was a prophet. He was a judge. But he further says about him, "And he is an honorable man." And of course we know that anyone who endeavors to be a man or a person of God, a true follower and child of God, certainly should be honorable. That is, their word should be good. They should be one that can be trusted. They are not someone who is going to cheat or defraud anyone out of anything. They have a good name in the world so far as their honesty and integrity goes, and that was true of Samuel. He is an honorable man. He further says, all that he saith cometh surely to pass. So it was well known that the words of Samuel were true words. He was truly a prophet of God. All that he saith surely cometh to pass. And this is consistent with what was said of Samuel when he was still a child, and God appeared to him, and he became a prophet. that none of his words shall fall to the ground. That is, the thing that Samuel says are going to be things that God backs up, things that come from God, and so they're going to come to pass. None of his words shall fall to the ground. This was a known fact. And so the servant here, realizing their nearness to this man, their nearness to this prophet, proposes to Saul that they go see him, and they go inquire of him. Now, it may be that the servant even had more religion than Saul had. He might have had more faith in the prophet than Saul himself had, because it seems to be his idea. He seems to have thought of it. And so he says, now let us go thither. Peradventure, he can show us our way that we should go. So let's go ask this man. Everything he says comes to pass. He knows what's going on. He's a man of God. He's an honorable person. He'll tell us the truth if he knows it. And so let's go see if maybe he can tell us which way we should go. Now, this was really a very poor reason to be consulting a prophet, to ask him which way we should go, how can we better find our lost animals. This is not a good reason to go consult a prophet at all. But we find that it's very common for man to want to seek after things that will give them more fortune. They want to have their fortune told. They want to know which way to go in this life, as far as wealth and goods goes. But they're not too interested in seeking after a prophet to find out how to save their souls. They're not too interested in seeking about how to straighten up their lives so that they can be free of their sins and properly serve God. And so their desire was to see if Samuel could show them which way to go. Verse 7, then said Saul to his servant, but behold, if we go, what shall we bring the man? For the bread is spent in our vessels, and there is not a present to bring to the man of God. What have we? Now, whether Saul was actually trying to avoid going to see Samuel, and he used the pretense that we don't have anything to bring him, or whether he felt like that he was going to owe the prophet something if they went, and was ashamed to go without having something to offer him, it's not real clear here, but he does make this statement to the servant, and he says, what have we? We don't have any gift. We don't have any bread. What can we bring him? And the servant answered Saul again and said, behold, I have here at hand the fourth part of a shekel of silver. That will I give to the man of God to tell us our way. So the servant again is forward, and he says, I have some money. I have a small amount of money, and I will give that to the man of God to tell us our way. I'll be willing to give him that I have. And so it seems that although they weren't giving a large amount of money, they were going to give what they had. And we do not know that Samuel would have required any money at all. That it would not have been necessary to have paid Samuel for his service. But we have reason to think that if Samuel took the money, that he used it in some way or another to maybe feed the poor or take care of those that had less. For Samuel didn't seem to have a price for his service. And they might have looked a little bit on Samuel as though he might have been something like a fortune teller and needed to be paid for his services in that respect, because there's a little bit of a question as to the validity of their request as to just to find out which way to go to find these lost animals. And so the ninth verse tells us in parentheses, before time in Israel, when a man went to inquire of God, thus he spake, come, let us go to the seer. For he that is now called a prophet was before time called a seer. So this verse is just an explanation on the part of the historian who wrote this book of 1 Samuel, that the name for a prophet at this time was a seer. And the word seer just simply means a man who sees, a man who has some insight, a man who has information that is not ordinarily available, a man who has information that he can take and apply and get the benefit out of, so that he then is above other men in his ability to see or to know or to apply these various facts. And so, rather than saying going to a prophet, they were saying, let's go to the seer. But that was just another name for a prophet. Verse 10, then said Saul to his servant, well said, come, let us go. So now Saul is convinced that this is the best move to make at this present time. We're close to the city of Ramah. Let's go in and see this great man, this man who has the ability to tell us things that are true. He has none of his words to not come to pass. So he says, come, let us go. So they went into the city where the man of God was. And of course we know that means they were going to consult with Samuel. Verse 11, and as they went up the hill to the city, they found young maidens going out to draw water, and said unto them, is the seer here? So they found young maidens out on their daily activities of drawing water. We see here that the people of the day didn't require the women to stay at home all time and to be confined and not be out in the goings and comings of society, but they found these young maidens that were routinely going out to draw water. They asked them, is the seer here? And they answered them and said, he is. Behold, he is before you. Make haste now, for he came today to the city, for there's a sacrifice of the people today in the high place. So even these young maidens knew that Samuel was here. This was a special day. He was here for a sacrifice of the people, a sacrifice to be offered in the high place. Now, we know that Samuel did build an altar here at Ramah, and since the Ark of the Covenant was no longer in the tabernacle, this law about having to go to the tabernacle to work no doubt didn't apply at this time. God hadn't chosen to place his name any one place at this particular time, and he wouldn't for a while yet. So there was an altar here. There was a sacrifice of the people being offered this day, and it was one that Samuel was to preside over. So he was here in the city this day, and these maidens knew about it. Now, one of the things we'd like to point out is that Saul wasn't acquainted with Samuel. He'd never seen Samuel, and he only lived 20 miles or so away from Ramah, and yet he'd never seen him, never come into contact with him, and he wasn't even aware of the fact that there was to be a sacrifice here this day. So it seemed that Saul wasn't that much of a religiously inclined person, that he was more busy taking care of the affairs of his home and family, and wasn't as well aware of what was going on with Samuel even as these maidens were. And for him not to have been acquainted with Samuel, and for him to have been so unaware of some of the goings-on of the great prophet, is certainly not a compliment for Saul. Verse 13, as soon as ye be come into the city, ye shall straightway find him, before he go up to the high place to eat. Now they had already told Saul that he is before you. Make haste, for he's in the city today. And what they're saying is, if you hurry, you'll catch him before he goes up to the high place. You'll catch him before he goes up to the altar to offer the sacrifice. And if you do not catch him before he goes up, of course, the implication is that he's going to be tied up for a while, and you're not going to be able to get to him. So you should straightway find him before he go up to the high place to eat, for the people will not eat until he come, because he doth bless the sacrifice. And so the sacrifice was the most important thing. It had to be blessed first, and then the people would eat of that portion of the sacrifice that was allowed for them to eat. But first of all, since Samuel was presiding over this, he had to bless it. He had to return thanks for it. He had to carry out the religious part of this, and then they engaged in the secular part of eating. And so he says they will not eat until he doth bless the sacrifice. And afterwards they eat that be bidden. So those that are invited to this feast, those that are participating in it, they will be eating. So everybody's waiting for Samuel. It's an important event. They do not eat till he comes. They do not eat until he blesses the sacrifice. And so time is of the essence now. Saul and his servant are going to catch Samuel before he gets into this ceremony of the sacrifice. So they further say, now therefore get you up, for about this time you shall find him. This is about the time when you can contact him before he goes up to the sacrifice. Verse 14, and they went up into the city, and when they were come into the city, behold, Samuel came out against them for to go up to the high place. So this looks like a chance meeting, but as they go into the city, they happen to come into the vicinity of Samuel. Samuel came out against them. They were going one way. Samuel was walking toward them, so they were meeting each other. Samuel on his way up to the high place, and they were looking for Samuel, a man who they didn't know, they'd never seen before, but they were looking for him. Verse 15, now the Lord had told Samuel in his ear a day before Saul came, saying, so the Lord had spoken to Samuel about Saul, told him in his ear, that is, told him in a private way, about Saul, told him he was going to meet Saul, and this is what he said on the day before, tomorrow, about this time, I will send thee a man out of the land of Benjamin, and thou shalt anoint him to be captain over my people Israel, that he may save my people out of the hand of the Philistines. So Samuel knew that he was looking for a man like Saul. The Lord had already told him to be on the lookout for him, that he was going to send him a man from Benjamin. And he says that you shall anoint him to be captain over my people Israel. He's going to be made the ruler, the leader over my people Israel. So here's a man who's out looking for some stray asses. He's lost some of these animals, and he's wandering about looking for them, and suddenly he's going to be catapulted into the position of occupying the throne of Israel. He's going to be captain over my people Israel. And this reminds us of that part of the song of Hannah in 1 Samuel 2 and 8, where the song says in verse 8, he raiseth up the poor out of the dust, and lifteth up the beggar from the dunghill, to set them among princes, and to make them inherit the throne of glory. For the pillars of the earth are the Lord's, and he has set the world upon them. So here's a man who truly was being brought up from the dust to be placed upon the throne of glory. He was going to be made king, and at this time he had no idea that this was going to happen. We'll close at that point. Till next time, this is NC Crouch saying goodbye, friends.